Right, good morning everyone. I can see all the names coming in now. Welcome, we are here this morning to hear from Tatton on their full year results. They've had a busy week on the road, so we've hit Friday and ready to talk to you guys. Just a couple of things, you know, you can ask questions as we go along, as well as at the end, you can submit them via the question button at the bottom, or you're welcome to send me an email, hannah@equitydevelopment.co.uk. We have published a note which is up on our website. That's been there since Tuesday when results were out. So if you are interested in a written piece, you can find that there. We're also recording this and we'll be distributing it after the event if you want to watch it back or send it to your friends. Otherwise, I will hand over to Paul Hogarth, CEO, to tell you a little more.
Thank you, Hannah, and good morning, everybody. Yes, the roadshow that wasn't really, because it was all sort of virtual, but we've had our virtual roadshow and coming to the end today. If I could start off by just explaining the structure of the business, which is on slide 6 of your decks. Thank you, Hannah. What we have there are the three divisions. Tatton Investment Management is obviously the key driver of the group. It's responsible for 75% of the group's revenue and is the real sort of major reason why our people have bought our shares on the IPO and obviously since. We are a discretionary fund manager MPS service. We service the IFA community and on platform only. So when I refer to on platform, I mean platforms like IntegraFin, Nucleus, AJ Bell, etc., which are all listed platform providers. I'll go on to talk about the size of the market, but the reason that we've been so successful over the period has been our low-cost challenger model. We charge 15 basis points, which is the lowest in the market. And, you know, we work very, very closely with the IFA community. And the main reason for the IPO in the first place was to improve our profile and for it to enable our business development consultants to be able to connect with IFAs with all of the information that they have that's obviously in the market, enabling them actually to deal with all of the due diligence requirements that the IFAs would have. Happy to say that that's been a huge success, and I'll come back onto that later. Just turning to the right-hand side, then looking at the Paradigm IFA Support Services Division, which includes Paradigm Consulting and also includes Paradigm Mortgage Services. That's where we work with IFAs and mortgage advisors. We help them with a range of regulatory and compliance support, technical support, and obviously business consultancy. And on the mortgage side, we help them with aggregation around the mortgage event, if you like, with lending and also with protection and other insurance aggregation as well. Very importantly, that IFA Support Services Division gives us an awful lot of intel on what the IFA and mortgage advisors want. And really, that's where Tatton Investment Management came from. It was a response from those firms, those IFAs who had money on platform, who wanted a repeatable, robust model and didn't feel that existing fund management businesses were actually giving them that, and certainly weren't giving them that at the right price. We listened to them and we created Tatton Investment Management back in 2013, and we've been rewarded with over £1 billion worth of assets per annum over that period. So that should take us through the divisional structure. Turning to slide 8, I won't pick out every single bullet point, this won't be death by PowerPoint, but I will pick up some sort of key highlights. Obviously, we're delighted with the increase in revenue and profitability. And really, actually, when you look at the 3 years that we've nearly been on AIM, our anniversary will be the first week of July. I'm really pleased to say that we've managed to double our revenue and also double our profit over those 3 years. So they're the two sort of key highlights from that one. The bottom, or moving towards the bottom, the dividend payment of 6.4p, which is an increase of 14.3% on last year, has resonated well with our shareholders. it wasn't that much of a difficult decision to make, to be honest, because we always promised we would distribute 70% of our distributable reserves in our admission document. And, you know, the business is financially strong, as you can see. It has no debt and has cash of just short of 13 million. And obviously, turning to COVID, you know, obviously COVID has been, you know, very much on everybody's minds. And I will spend a fair bit of time going through how the three divisions are affected by COVID. But we went into COVID knowing that we had a very strong proposition with high recurring revenues and obviously strong financial position. And therefore, we could see this as a bump in the road. And, you know, obviously there would be some lost momentum, but we did think that we would be fine as we came out of the other side of COVID. And that certainly proved to be the case. And I'll also prove later on how the IFAs have conducted themselves and how, again, they will, because of their recurring model, be okay and will come out of the other side and will, you know, have their businesses moving forward too. Unfortunately, that's not obviously been the case for lots of other businesses, but for us, you know, that certainly has been the situation. Turning to slide 9, you know, obviously moving in towards the end of our year, and our year end was March, we were really excited. This is obviously pre-COVID, in that our flows had been so attractive. We were banging on the door of 8 billion of AUM, which would have been an increase of a third. So we would have gone from 6 billion to 8 billion over the 12 months. Unfortunately, COVID came, and like everybody else, we were affected and we dropped back. Our FUM dropped back down to about 6.55. But I'm happy to say that since then, with the market recovery and also with our flows, we're now up to 7.55, as you can see on the slide. So running into COVID, over the year, we had average flows of 94, but our second half of the year was much stronger than that. And we were sort of towards the end, sort of 114, 115 a month, which was excellent. And I'll show you IFA engagement very shortly around that time. Really happy to say that even in today's world, whilst we're still in lockdown, our net inflows are now coming in over 50 million for April and also for May. And actually, we only had one negative week in the whole period, even when obviously the market was going through its very, very tricky stage. My other sort of key highlight on this slide is the number of firms we're working with. And going back to the point about the IPO, that really has helped our profile and getting our name around. Our brand is increasing in size and in scale. And we are getting in front of more and more IFA businesses. And as we do that, you know, we can see that the number of firms that we're working with has increased by a third to just short of 600. So I'm really, really pleased with that. I think that's absolutely an incredible number. Our long-term business partnership with Tenet is going well. And we now have over 80-odd firms working with us. And in fact, the number that we have of assets under management is now 300 million from the Tenet Group. We get on incredibly well at head office level and at board level, and it's a good strategic partnership that we're very, very pleased with. And we can still see us getting over a billion in time from the Tenet IFAs. That probably is it on key highlights. You can see that the mortgage business, again, was performing very well with gross lending facilitation up. You know, and you could see that we had increased by 17.5%. But I will actually cover, you know, where we are with the three divisions. If I could now flip over to slide 10, you can see on slide 10 the financial progress that I mentioned earlier. You can see the increase in revenue over the 3 years, doubling, and obviously the profitability. And you can also see how our margin has improved as well. I won't steal any of Paul Edwards's thunder around the numbers. I'll let him come back and cover that in greater detail. So what I would like to do is take you to slide 18, if I may. And on slide 18, what we are showing there really is the sort of the effect of lockdown. And, you know, we were, as I said, absolutely flying prior to lockdown. We were seeing 30 new IFA businesses a week with our business development team. And that 30 a week, you know, equating to over 100 a month or 1,000 a year, It really was, you know, a tremendous level. And then, of course, lockdown comes, and as you can see, that graph drops off a cliff. Now, businesses like Tatton and other fund managers, obviously, we have business continuity plans, which absolutely bite in as soon as they need to. And I'm happy to say that we move from working in the offices to working remotely, seamlessly, you know, on from the Monday to the Tuesday. There was no drop in service levels whatsoever. I have to say that's not quite the same for many IFAs, because they are smaller businesses and wouldn't have been as equipped or as prepared for the business continuity level. And that's really why the business dropped off so steeply. Then over time, they've got themselves back up to speed. And we can see, as you can see from the graph there, as we move across from April into May, that the level of engagement with new firms was increasing all the time. And I'm happy to say that, you know, the BDMs are telling me we're up to sort of 20, 21 new meetings per week, which is really, really strong. Now, I don't believe that any IFA businesses are going to go out of business because of COVID. Like us, they've got recurring revenue models. They haven't got any gearing. And, you know, they will be going back to normality as soon as the government allows that to happen. But we do know that the older advisor with older clients hasn't performed as well as the younger advisors have in this remote world. So the younger advisors, obviously, very quick to adapt to Microsoft Teams and Zoom and all the other ways of dealing with their clients remotely. But the older IFA has struggled somewhat. And also, obviously, the older IFA's clients are older as well. And they certainly don't want to be seeing their IFA. They don't want their IFA visiting them in their homes. And nor do they want to actually visit an IFA's office. So, you know, I think that's testament to how strong those flows are. I think it's testament to show that, you know, despite with one arm, probably even both arms tied behind their backs, they've continued to trade as well as they have done. We've also spent an awful lot of time with the firms to reassure them, and in particular, give them all of the market commentary that they need and the videos that they need to actually make sure that when clients come on the phone to them and are worried about the markets, that they're very well equipped to answer any of those clients' queries. Lothar and the team have done a tremendous job on that, and I think that will stand us in great stead when we get back into normality and IFA start, you know, having peer group meetings, breakfast meetings, seeing other IFAs. And of course, they'll be discussing what life was like during lockdown for them, and can see how well they've performed and been supported as opposed to others. So I think we will get rewarded for that when we get back to normal. So that neatly takes me through to talking about the other two divisions. So as you can see, the Tatton Investment Management piece has been affected, but it's growing back very nicely. We expect that we'll see us in H2 growing back to the sort of previous high levels that we were at, and probably beyond, as we see increasing demand for our services. Looking at Paradigm Consulting, that's the business division that's been the least affected by COVID. We were already in a position to work remotely with the firms anyway. And as I said to you, the number of firms will be the same, or very, very similar. We don't expect businesses to go out of business on the back of the COVID pandemic. Unfortunately, when you look at the mortgage division, that is the one that is the most affected. The mortgage market absolutely stopped, but has actually come back over the last 2 to 3 weeks. And we've seen some very interesting spikes in business. Regionally, it looks pretty strong, maybe not so much in London. But we do and are aware that the banks are a little bit more risk averse with their LTV policies. And also, obviously, with the spectre of unemployment coming through is quite high as well. So, of the three divisions, we think the mortgage one probably relative is the one that's going to be affected the most. But as I said earlier, we have 75% of our revenue coming from the Tatton business, and 25 from Paradigm Consulting and Paradigm Mortgages, with mortgages being half of that 25 or 12.5%. I think probably I'll take a breather here and pass you over to Paul, who will take you to slide 12, and he'll take you through the numbers in greater detail.
Perfect. Okay, good morning, everybody. The profit and loss here looks probably more detailed than it needs to be. What we've been concentrating on this week with our investor base is very much the like-for-like underlying revenue and the adjusted operating profit, which, as you've seen, has grown to 20.2 million or by 15%, and 9.1 million or 24%. And that's led to an adjusted fully diluted earnings per share growth of 20% or just under to 12 pence. But I think that the figure we're most proud of to some extent is the dividend this year. So as Paul was explaining earlier, we've paid a final dividend of 6.4p. And for those that follow us, you'll have seen from our trading update in April that we sat back, probably like most of the companies out there, and said, should we be paying a dividend in these times? And when we looked at our business model, which is very much low risk and high margin, with lots of recurring revenue, and the fact that, you know, we're still continuing to not only just make profits, but also grow, it seemed obviously the right thing to do. So when you add the interim dividend to the 6.4p, you'll see a 9.6 pence dividend, which is covered 1.3 to 1.4 times. So a very strong performance in the year. And I think the dividend also is a good statement of confidence going forward. Moving to the next page, on page 13, the balance sheet highlights. I'm not going to bore you actually with running through every bullet point. What I would like to say is that the balance sheet is actually very robust. You know, we're debt-free, as we highlighted in the highlights earlier, with net cash of 12.8 million. It's interesting to see that is actually just over one times of our overall cost base for the group. So that clearly puts us in a very strong financial liquidity position. And we're actually in the process of increasing our facilities, and we're looking to put in a 10 million RCF facility, and that should be in place for H1 this year, and that'll be used for further growth of the business and potentially acquisitions going forward. The other point I'd probably like to make here as well is that we regard the business being very much capital light. You know, so what that really means is there's no significant requirement for capital investment in terms of fixed assets. And also, because we're not a manufacturing business, there's no significant working capital drag. So no stock on the shelves, and you know, there's no significant debtors. So what that means is that our net assets 17.8, actually, we deliver a return on capital employed of 49%, which is obviously as a consequence of our high margins and a relatively low capital base. So if we could just move to the next slide, please, Hannah, page 14. So this is the obligatory cash flow. So it's just a bridge between the 2 years. The key point here really is that cash generated from operations before exceptional items is actually 9.8 million, which is actually 108% of our operating profits. So that gives you an indication of the level of cash that the business produces. And then obviously you've got the normal outflows for the dividends, and we've been paying dividends every year since we floated, and also obviously corporation tax. And then you've got the 2 million for the Symphonia acquisition, which was an acquisition we made back in last September of 5 separate funds. And then obviously we've took the opportunity to purchase our own shares this year, which is to satisfy potential future options. And if we added those two items back to the 12.8 million, we would have actually delivered more in line of 16 million of cash this year. So again, a very, very strong performance. Okay, on the next page, just to talk about the divisional financial performance. This slide really was put in very much for the analyst community. It was really to set out on the commentary side. The left-hand side was, to say, what is it that drives the performance of the individual two businesses? And on the right-hand side is the impact of COVID. And you will see that net inflows of 1.1 billion, which is an average of 94 million a month, very much split between H1 and H2. And people forget this time last year, we were going through the debacle of Brexit, and also it was pre-election. So, you know, flows were broadly 40% of the total in the year and 60% in the second half of the year. And we ended the year with AUM of 6.7 billion, albeit in mid-February, we're at 7.8. And actually, believe it or not, fell back to as low as 6.5 billion. So how are those things being affected? Well, clearly, you know, the 6.7 billion has since recovered to just under 7.6 or 7.55, actually. Paul's touched on the IFA engagement. The average net inflows, while down from the average of 94 million last year, still very good, you know, considering the times we're in certain lockdown, at just under 52 million, still very, very strong. And clearly we expect H2 flows to return broadly to normal. So how have we reacted to this? Well, we've currently got a recruitment freeze on, and we've also put a freeze in increases in pay as well. That said, we will incur some cost increases next year, and that will mainly be the recruitment costs that we've made this year, which will have the full year impact. And the other place where we will invest will be in information security, so IT, cyber security, portal maintenance, etc. And the one-off cost of the ACD transfer for Synthonia to our current provider, which is ValueTrack. And when you look at Paradigm, I mean, Paul touched on this a little earlier, very much a membership business, whether that's a mortgage members or consulting members. And what's driven the growth there is effectively the increase in those number of members in mortgages and a small price increase at the beginning of the year for consultancy. Consultancy should be relatively unaffected by COVID. There may be a little impact on the ad hoc consultancy in the first part of this year, but the membership is staying strong. And in fact, actually, we anticipate we'll actually add members throughout the year. Clearly, mortgages is going to be impacted. There's no doubt about that. The lenders have started to reduce their LTVs. You know, and I think the latest this week actually was Nationwide, who reduced theirs down to 85%. That's clearly going to impact completions. So we expect those completions to be, you know, somewhere between 15 to 25% reduced over the year. And obviously through lockdown, you know, valuations have been very difficult to complete, and they will be affected in H1, there's no doubt about that. But overall, we still anticipate increasing firms, and we expect that business, you know, broadly to get back to normal, certainly the beginning of next year, but hopefully more so in H2. But I guess we'll see, and time will tell on that front. On the next page, on the final slide, I think for the finance section, what we actually wanted to just separate out here was the divisional development over the last 3 years. And as you can see, you know, Tatton now is very much, you know, the main driver of the group. It's 75% of the revenue. And developed over that period of time. But on adjusted profit basis, as you can see there from the bar graph below, each year, plus or minus, it's very much been broadly 100% of the overall profitability of the group, with Paradigm actually covering the central overhead. And in many ways, it's just a quite neat way of looking at the business, in that Tatton is the growth engine. You know, the market dynamics are very strong within Tatton. And actually will also drive 100% of the profitability of the group, with Paradigm effectively covering the fixed cost and the over central overhead of the group.
Thank you, Paul.
Back to Paul.
Okay, thanks, Paul. If we could move to slide 19, please, Hannah. What we are attempting to do over the next 2 to 3 slides really is just talk about the market and how it's growing. IFAs are still continuing to put assets onto platforms. And actually, AJ Bell commissioned a report from Hardmans, and who did a piece of research for them, which showed that there's 700 billion of assets sitting on UK advisory platforms as we speak today. The previous data that we've got is from Platforum, which shows that number at 500. And at that time, at the 500, about 48.1 was actually in the DFM MPS space, i.e. where Tatton play. We believe that that number is much higher now. We think it's probably in the region of 70, and therefore running at 10% of the total assets that are sitting on these IFA UK advisory platforms. So as you can see, 70 billion with us run about 7.55, we've got in excess of 10% market share. And on the next slide, what I want to do is actually sort of be giving you an idea of the penetration. So slide 20, please. And on slide 20, we'll give you an idea of the penetration that we're running at with the IFA businesses. So if you look at the pie charts on the left-hand side, you can see of our current AUM, 65% has come from the Paradigm firms and 35% has come from the new non-Paradigm firms who've joined us post-IPO. And you can see from the bottom pie chart that actually 70% of the firms are now new firms and 31% is Paradigm. We know that each firm on average has about 40 million on platform, and we know exactly what penetration we've got with each one of the IFA businesses that we work with. And if you take the Paradigm penetration, it's running currently at 23.3 of the 40. And of the new firms that have joined us latterly, post-IPO, we're running at about 5.7 of the 40. So if we were to receive or get reach the same sort of penetration level with the new firms as we have done with the Paradigm firms, and we see no reason why we shouldn't over time because they're very, very similar businesses, we've got a latent opportunity of 17.6 million times the 409 firms, or another 7.2 billion. So if we basically stood still and just looked after the 595 firms that we've got currently, we could add another 7.2 billion to the 7.55. I'm not obviously suggesting that we do that. We will look to continue to drive and attract more IFA businesses to working with us. One of our competitors, Brewin Dolphin, have over 1,700 firms who support them. So there's a long, long way for us to go on recruitment of new firms. But it does show you the potential within the business to actually effectively double the AUM by working closely with the firms that have already adopted our processes. So, you know, that's a pretty impressive position. If you move to slide 21, on industry trends, I think it's important that we look at those. You know, we can see that, you know, our environment is becoming more competitive. We still remain the lowest cost provider, but we can see some activity from some of the other players. They are actually getting more alert around the size of the market and where it's going. So obviously we expect more competition. So we can't rest on our laurels. We won't rest on our laurels. And we'll always look to continue to maintain that market position that we've got, which is the obviously the largest provider of the DFM MPS service in the country. We will look to extend and expand. I use an expression of wanting to become a true asset manager. And what I meant by that was, is, you know, we want to drive forward into other areas. So, you know, we're obviously a titan in the DFM MPS space, but we would also like to extend our multi-asset, multi-manager range and attract more funds from IFAs in that regard, and certainly concentrating very much on the rise of the passive portfolios, which or passive OEICs that the IFAs are supporting currently. So we will be looking to do that more from Lothar on that later. We do expect IFA consolidation to continue. There's a sort of a push and a pull, or a positive and a negative for the group on that. When you look at Paradigm Consulting, we will and have lost some firms to consolidators. It's not a big number, but it does exist, and I think it probably will continue to exist. But on the Tatton Investment Management side, we're already talking to one or two consolidators about powering their investment solution for their IFAs that they've purchased. Again, because of the success in and how we've adopted IFAs and their funds into the Tatton portfolios. So I think that neatly takes me to Lothar, really. I think if I could pass over to him, he'll take you through the fund management piece in more detail.
Thank you very much, Paul. Yes, if we can go to slide 25, please. That's what we have in the past to refer to as our our bragging chart. Very nice curve upwards, which now has its very own little COVID kink there at the end. So as Paul said and mentioned on his earlier slides, we did not suffer outflows except for one single week, which was the last week of March, when the noise from the media and generally from the sell down became the strongest. We had about 11 million of outflows, but compared to the 7 billion that we manage, that's obviously relatively small. So if we carry on to the next slide, 26, that gives you a quick overview and reminder for those who are already well versed with our business model, what we do specifically on platforms. So we are a specialist investment manager running private client portfolios exclusively on UK retail advisor-led platforms, 14 of them now, which also means that we are not having to carry the fixed cost element of having our own back office operations. We are using back office operations of 14 different platforms, obviously very closely linked with them through the IT platform, which actually also enabled us, as Paul said, to really be fully operational from one day to the next in the remote office-based environment. Very important there, it was also that all our telephone systems migrated seamlessly, so our helplines were immediately available from the first day that we all had to work from home. So we're running our segregated model portfolio service on those platforms. We have recently supplemented that or added our bespoke investment services to them. They're bespoke in respect of adding certain additional features to the model-based approach. They're still very much starting from the model portfolio service, using those as building blocks, but then adding elements that clients may need beyond the standard service. Predominantly at the moment, pension drawdown services, where they want to have a certain forward planning for their annual cash flow for the next couple of years, so that isn't invested in the full portfolio. And for those services, our competitors have been charging significant margins in the past in off-platform arrangements. We knew and we felt that it should also become available on platforms, so we've repeated what we'd done before, our price challenging approach by offering services that were up to that point only available to much larger portfolios and a much higher cost, and we've brought it to the mass affluent markets. We're exclusively available through IFA, so we have no direct client relationships. They're all through the IFAs, which also takes away the second big fixed cost overhead that traditional firms have, in that we don't have to have a team of client relationship managers. That's all being done through the IFAs, but we have to then, and we do hold a very close contact with the IFAs and provide them with all the information they may need on an ongoing basis to carry out that task of client relationship managing their clients for the investment proposition. We've complemented our multi-manager portfolios with multi-manager funds for those platforms where discretionary portfolios can't yet operate, and that's proving quite successful now with over 2 billion in assets under management just through the funds, and we will continue to do that as we go forward. So if we go to the next slide then, 27, our COVID slide, and that's really been a very key part of that asset flow story that Paul was talking about early on, and why we only had 1 week of negative flows, which is that we found historically, and me particularly over the financial crisis 10 years ago, that oftentimes clients make that ultimate mistake of divesting at the lowest point of the markets, then staying in cash and coming back in when the markets have recovered. It's oftentimes based on just lack of knowledge, fear, or not really getting the right insight. And the moment you provide clients with more contextual information around what is happening and go beyond what the media and perhaps some of the industry provide, then you can actually put their minds to quite a bit more peace. And that's not just by saying, look, this is all going to be over. It's just a heightened level of volatility. We've seen it before. It's more actually explaining what is happening in the market, what they're reading in the media, and putting it into perspective. And historically, we've done that through bulletins. So, for example, after the Brexit vote, we did that. But this time around, we found that little video clips of a couple of minutes are actually proving even more effective. And so that's what this slide shows you. If we go to the next slide, 28, obviously COVID was something that we have dealt with, that we're still dealing with on an ongoing basis at the moment, but it is also a catalyst for change. And we're getting ready for the post-COVID world. And one of the big changes that we've observed in our society at large, but also in the investment audience of recent years, is this disparity in core beliefs, dispersion between is the world going to be more local in future, or are we going to continue on the path of globalization? Therefore, are the biggest investment opportunities going to be local or global? And rather than sort of mudding the water and going some halfway house in there by disappointing either side, we believe that just as we've in the past offered clients the choice between active and passive, but you know, remain agnostic ourselves, we do the same with the global versus regional belief. So from now onwards, our portfolios will be available in a global version as well as in the classic home biased version. And we will in time also complement that again with a fund range, with a tracker fund range that will come in at the known low cost levels that we run portfolios with, or very close to those, at least seeing some of the lowest OCF managed tracker funds in the markets. That's the plan at the moment. If we go to slide 29, you can see how our assets under management are distributed across the proposition matrix. So each line represents one of our portfolio styles, from Tatton Managed Active, where we invest entirely through actively stock selecting funds, to Tatton Tracker, which is tracker based, and then the hybrid, a bit of both, ethical and income. Now, just as in previous years, we see an increasing interest in the tracker and hybrid out of cost pressures, really, that are going through the industry, and advisors increasingly putting clients into tracker portfolios. But quite encouragingly as well, we've seen the Tatton Ethical proposition double. It may still only be 3% of our total assets under management, but it's growing quite fast, and it is oftentimes introducing new IFAs to our business as they're searching for an ethical, fully risk profile portfolio range for their clients, call us up and then learn about our wider proposition and on just how many platforms they can access our services. The last two slides, so if we go to slide 30, shows you how our portfolios have fared over the longer term, but also over the shorter term. So the first time on the right-hand side, we're showing our performance on a risk-adjusted basis or a risk-return basis against some of our key competitors. So the green blobs points are the Tatton portfolios, which you can see are spread out quite evenly over the risk band, and then the gray dots, our competition. And as you can see, this time around, with the market downturn, the industry, I think, has done a relatively decent job in providing the clients with returns that are in line with the risk profiles that they were invested in. We haven't repeated the experience that clients sometimes had during the financial crisis 10 years ago, where they might have seen unexpectedly large falls in things that were termed cautious or defensive funds and portfolios. So this close adherence to risk profiles has clearly worked. Although if we turn to the next slide, it also tells us where the outliers are. So this shows the performance of our ethical portfolio against the broader range of competitors. And it becomes clear that there have been certain areas which have produced a different investment return. And while ethical investors are obviously very happy that their turn to the ethical side has been seemingly rewarded, we have to recognize that much of that is just structural and driven by the investment universe, with ethical, the ethical badge usually not being awarded to oil and resource companies, and banks also oftentimes struggling, whereas growth and tech stocks find it a lot easier to qualify for the badge. And as we know, growth, tech, And then the focus on the US have been aspects that have clearly outperformed in the markets over the last 18 months and particularly since the beginning of the year. So there is probably also an increased interest just on the back of better past performance, although one has to warn that mean reversion still is an element in the markets, and therefore this better performance may not last forever.
Thank you, Lothar. If we could just move to slide 32 then, which is our summary slide. Obviously, as you can tell from this morning's presentation, all of the growth has been organic, and we've continued along that path and have been really, really pleased with that. And we can see that there is loads of potential and pent-up demand for the service. So, you know, we will continue on that trend. We will look to have further strategic partnerships with other IFA businesses like Tenet. But as I said earlier, we would like to broaden our asset management proposition organically, and certainly, or definitely organically, and potentially by acquisition as well. So when we talk about M&A activity, I think our M&A activity would only be around improving the funds under management number or sort of moving that needle. And I think it's, you know, that's the key element. If we could see that we could get a range of OEICs or a book of business that actually improved the FUM, was involved with IFAs and was on platform and came at the right price, then we would be interested. And that's how we see the M&A activity. I doubt very much whether we'd have M&A activity around the mortgage business or of the Paradigm Consulting business, with obviously our key focus on growth being the improvement and the growth of our FUM and to broaden the asset management proposition. So again, listen to those IFAs. It's critical that we do that. Listen to what they want, and obviously then go ahead and manufacture and create what they want, so, and to get their loyalty and obviously move their assets across to us. I think that probably takes us to the end of the formal presentation, but as I'm sure there'll be a number of questions, but I'll pass you back over to Hannah.
Hi, well, thank you, Paul. And yes, we've got a few in already. Just a reminder that you can use the question button at the bottom of the presentation, or you're always welcome to email me. So let's start with a couple that we had emailed in advance. As we look ahead, obviously, on a nice 3 to 5 year projection, you are looking to double assets under management. In that time, you know, profits don't seem to be accelerating at a faster pace. So where has the operational gearing gone in that scenario?
One for you, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, where we sit at the moment, over the last, 3 years, you know, the operational gearing has delivered margin increases from sort of 38 to over 42%. We will continue to invest in costs as we go forward to support the business, albeit we very much have a culture of under-promising and over-delivering, and I think that's something that we've done over the last 3 years. So the forecasts that we do put out in there in the market are, there is a range, first of all. I think what you will see from the equity development forecasts, they're probably towards the bottom of the range, and we are followed by a number of other analysts as well. So you will see margin progression as we go forward. That said, we will still continue to invest in costs to support the growth of the business.
So that leads on to another question then, which was over the next 3 to 5 years and to support that growth, have you got most of the building blocks in place, or will there be more investment required, and to what quantum if there is?
Again for you, Paul.
Yeah, no, we definitely have the building blocks in place, you know, in terms of, as I said, you know, when I talked about the balance sheet, there's no significant requirement for investment in capital. Where we will invest is in the front end to grow the AUM. So in terms of, you know, the sales and marketing investment, we have recently supported our investment team with the addition of a global economist. And we'll also invest in compliance as well to make sure that everything is, let's say, appropriately managed there as well. In terms of central cost, that's broadly going to stay the same. There's been no significant increase in sort of, as I say, PLC costs or general support back office. But the cost where we will be is in those three areas where I just described.
Okay, thank you. Looking then perhaps a bit more at the fundamentals of what makes Tatton the business that it is. And I've heard this from a few people over the weeks and months. You know, how do you continue to come in at the bottom of the price range and yet deliver, you know, all those Q1 top quartile metrics? And sort of leading on from that then, you know, as you continue to deliver and your performance is excellent and your price continues to be world beating, what do you see coming in terms of competitive threats and what are the barriers to others imitating your approach?
Sure. I think, it's a combination of many things that lead to the success so far. And that literally has been obviously the price to some degree, but definitely the consistency of the investment returns over the portfolios. But, you know, I think we really do understand the IFA. We have worked so closely with them over a number of decades, as I said earlier. And, you know, I always say, as long as we listen, you know, all we need to do is decide what we want to actually develop and move forward. But we have got tremendous loyalty. And I think people have enjoyed watching the business grow and the brand recognition to get stronger and stronger. And of course, IFAs talk to other IFAs all the time. And everybody has different experiences of the support they get from fund managers and product providers and platform providers. And, you know, it's so vital that we keep up the service levels and, you know, make every single IFA that comes to work with us feel special and important to us. And we are, you know, that is the culture of the business and, you know, always has been. And, you know, as long as I'm at the helm, that's exactly what we look to do. Lothar and the team, you know, do a great job when it comes to servicing those IFAs and making them feel part of the philosophy.
Okay, to that then, that point on your IFAs, obviously meetings are improving. I think you said you're back up to 21 a week.
Yeah.
How important is it that you have to vet these IFAs and check that their business is robust, or can you focus on the primary concern of just winning the assets that they manage on behalf of their clients?
I mean, I think the IFA sector has just got stronger and stronger and stronger. I think, you know, when you look at them as businesses, they're much more professional. And you know, most of the advisors that you meet these days that are still advising are very, very professional firms. Yes, we do an element of due diligence with them. But, you know, we know so much about them before we even get in front of them, to be honest, Hannah. And when you're there, we know where their assets are because they'll tell us which platforms they use. They'll tell us what their investment solution looks like. And then you can quickly get an idea of what kind of a business that is operated by the principals. Obviously, with the firms that we do compliance with, we know them even more so because we assist them around all elements of compliance, although it's still their name above the doorframe and they're still responsible for any of the errors and omissions that are made. But yeah, we know the IFA sector pretty well.
Good. Okay. Perhaps one for you, Lothar, then. Obviously, your performance speaks to the strength of the business. But could you perhaps outline a little bit more on what you do in terms of risk controls and what are your key investment criteria?
In terms of risk controls, we need to keep the portfolios to their risk profiles that the advisor has agreed with the clients. It's no different to any wealth manager managing to an investment mandate. And so we will monitor the portfolios on platform to be meeting those risk requirements. These days, it's also very important to have regard to the illiquidity risk that may be embedded in funds. So we stay away from anything that could come in danger there. And therefore, we have not been exposed to any of the funds that recently caused advisors trouble around property or certain other names that have gone into suspension. So that at the moment is one of the key things to monitor. But the other thing that can happen for advisors on platforms is that they're not quite aware where the portfolio might have been drifting to. So when you have, for example, strong equity markets, as we've now had for almost 3 months, your equity proportion will increase, and you have to be aware as to where you are. So for example, we adopted an overweight in April in equities, and that has nearly doubled by now. So that is something that we need to be aware of and that we will manage and need to be reviewing regularly.
I think if you pick up on Lothar's point there, a lot of the firms that come to work with us are firms that have decided that they don't want to manage their own portfolios anymore. That creating their own model portfolios and running those is actually not a very, very good business model. So when we actually get in front of them, we're obviously extolling the virtues of working in partnership with their fund management business, where effectively they could have the savings of changing their operating model and not actually giving the investment decisions and monitoring the portfolio, so they can concentrate on winning more new clients and deal with the financial planning and cash flow management of that. That really is the key sort of element. And when you talk about the illiquidity issues that Lothar's just mentioned, the staff fund manager, the MiFID II reporting, the suspension of the property funds, and obviously a correction in the markets, it's yet even more reason why the IFA really shouldn't be the fund manager or fulfilling the fund management role and running his own portfolios. So I'm expecting when we do get back to normality that there'll be lots of firms who have actually, through lockdown, been looking at their processes and said, actually, we need to make a change. I would expect it to be much more positive for us moving forward.
Yeah, specialisation and outsourcing is the name of the game.
Yeah.
Just to finish off that discussion then, via another question, do you invest in any private companies at all when we're talking about liquidity? And to what extent can you offer clients exposure to exciting AIM companies like yourselves?
The bulk of our service would not invest in any private companies or direct holdings. It's all through unitized vehicles as they are available on platforms. So we can make exceptions in our BPS, in our bespoke model portfolio service, if there are certain cherished holdings that a client might bring with them. That's one of the bespoke elements. And we also have an AIM portfolio service for IHT management purposes, where we can invest in AIM companies, but we would certainly, as a rule, not invest in our own shares through client portfolios because of potential conflicts of interest.
Brilliant. Well, listen, that's it from the questions from our listeners. So I hope that was helpful to all of you out there. Gentlemen, thank you all for your time. And good luck with the rest of your meetings this week, and everyone enjoy your weekend.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much, everybody. Bye-bye. Cheers. Take care.